This is NASCAR driver Tony Breidinger inviting you to make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for my favorite craveable chicken fingers. Turbocharge your order and get it even faster when you order online or with the Raising Cane's app. Raising Cane's chicken fingers, one love. Raising Cane's is not affiliated with NASCAR.
Hello, Sunshine. I'm Alexi Lawless and welcome to the State of the Union podcast, where we look at the beautiful game on and off the field through the lens of red, white, and blue colored glasses. This week, we'll be talking, well, an MLS roundup, the Queen, the Garage, Longhorns, prepping for a World Cup, the Lions, a U.S. jersey reveal, Boca River, converting EPL fans, football lines, and so much more. But first, joining me, as always, my friend, my colleague, my guiding light, David Mossy, a soccer savant and a Fox soccer researcher and writer extraordinaire. Mossy, how are you doing on this Monday, September 12th in the year 2022?
I am doing very well. A lot of positive reaction to our Chad Johnson interview. I hung out with some friends this weekend.
Really?
They were commenting on it. Yeah.
He's an interesting cat. I'm excited to work with him and see what he brings. You know, as if you didn't listen to it, check it out. You know, we drop these interviews every once in a while, and you know, some of them are more interesting than others. It's just the way that it goes. But I thought Chad Ocho Cinco Johnson was really interesting and was cool. And so he's going to be involved in our World Cup coverage. Did you watch anything? See anything? Read anything? Listen to anything?
I watched the latest episode of House of the Dragon. I am caught up there.
It's going gangbusters. Everyone keeps talking about this. And as you know, I can't watch it until it's fully done. So I don't want to be beholden to the man, or in this case, the dragon.
I did also watch the Princess Diana HBO documentary. For obvious and sad reasons, I've had the British royal family on the brain the last few days. And
sure,
so I watched that. And I'm actually also reading a great book about Algeria's War of Independence against France in the 50s and early 60s.
Look at you.
So I've got some things going on right now.
Before we get to what I watched, did you think that the Queen coverage was too much, or do you think it was good?
I mean, there's a whole larger conversation to be had about the British royal family and whether, you know, this.
Yeah, but you don't have to have that conversation. It's a woman that was incredibly impactful and legendary and historic, ultimately dying, who's also a grandmother and a mother. And
yeah, I mean, I dipped in and out of it, so I didn't get a sense for, was it just hours and hours of it with no interruption? I mean, whenever I put it on, it seemed to be what they were talking about, but I don't know if that's all they were talking about in all these news shows.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can have both conversations at the same time and recognize that this was, as I said, a woman who was incredibly impactful and someone that has been a constant. You know, and look, we're coming at it from an American angle. And there were certainly times over the last days where I was like, all right, well, you know, this continues on. And then I thought about it again. I said, you know, this was someone that was so important and impactful, and someone that was ever present, obviously, for you know, almost a century in people's lives. And so I think it was, you know, fitting in terms of the honor, including no EPL games on the weekend. And when we got off the air, we found out that that was going to happen, even though there was talk about that. And so it made for an interesting weekend when it comes to our soccer viewing. I watched, because obviously this was the 21st anniversary of the 9/11 attacks, and I watched a documentary called The 26th Street Garage. It's the FBI's untold story of this garage in Lower Manhattan that they used as the command center after the planes hit the towers. And it's just I've watched almost every single documentary that there is out there about 9/11. And this one was really interesting in terms of the way that they came together. And it's not necessarily that you learned new things about that day and that awful day, but it was a specific look at organization and leadership and working together in a moment of crisis and coming together. And I so thought that was a cool documentary that I saw. Did you watch anything else, my friend?
That's it.
That's it. Well, we mentioned that because of the passing of the Queen, there was no EPL. We're going to get into the European side of it later on, and obviously there will be no EPL. Still a wonderful weekend. Still plenty of soccer for us that kind of are connoisseurs of the game around the world to watch, including our domestic league here in Major League Soccer. You want to start there?
Let's do it. And let's start with FC Dallas's rousing come from behind 2-1 win over LAFC. Fourth defeat in five games for LAFC. That aura of invincibility seems to be dissipating.
As does their potential supporter shield chances.
Yeah. Hollingshead got sent off early, so they had to play most of the match down a man. They did score on the counter, Arango, to make it 1-0. And then two goals that they have to really be kicking themselves for conceding late. Free kick off to the side. Areola, quick thinking, rolls it across to Ferreira. He scores before LAFC knew what hit them. And then another free kick, which was just a complete howler by Maxime Crépeau. So Ferreira gets both. He's up to 18. Dallas third in the West. They're flying, and LAFC lose again.
Can I just say something about the quick free kick, okay? Remember last week when we were, well, not we, but a lot of people were hammering Chicharito for his missed Panenka, right? You know, that has inherent risk doing something like that. Not necessarily in terms of the data that we talked about, but in terms of if you don't make it, you look like an ass, which Chicharito did. This had actually even more risk. And if it doesn't pay off, don't get me wrong, I love it. I love the quick thinking. I actually don't think that we don't spend enough time and concentrate enough on those moments of lapsed concentration that exist in the game. We talk about soccer as a free-flowing game, and it is relative to many other sports. However, there are downtimes. There are times when people take mental breaks, and the ability to capitalize on those, I'm not saying the coaches don't talk about that and don't want you to recognize that, but it's few and far between. And oftentimes on a set piece, it's the one moment where you've actually drilled and rehearsed. And so many coaches want you to set it up, take the time, and do it the way that you planned. In this case, that wasn't what happened. And it resulted in that goal. And then the second goal, you got to save that. I mean, Jesus Ferreira is just hopefully putting the ball in a dangerous area and comes off looking like the hero there. But credit to FC Dallas, that we've said from the beginning of this season, have made themselves relevant, and obviously it's translating into results.
Vela started this game. He was subbed off for Bale in the 60th minute, and they can't hide behind load management anymore.
Nope.
There's a real issue there in fitting the pieces together and figuring out what their best lineup is. So Steve Trundle has some real weird decisions to make here as we enter the playoffs.
And again, I want Bale looking like a shell of his former self on that day against the U.S. in the World Cup. I don't want it happening here. And unfortunately, that's what's happening right now. So I hope he's not saving it for the World Cup.
The other L.A. team, the Galaxy, 1-1 draw away to Nashville. Mukhtar from the penalty spot is league-leading 22nd of the season. Then the Galaxy had a chance to equalize from the penalty spot early in the second half. Vasquez was going to take it. Chicharito asked for it. He took it. Did not go for Panenka. This time tried a more conventional kick, low and to the corner, but Willis saved it. So he's now 4 of 9 on penalties in his MLS career. But the Galaxy earned another penalty deep in stoppage time. This time, Ricky Puig steps up and he converts. So it ends 1-1. Chicharito, I saw you had a cheeky little tweet about like, oh, is this miss okay? Because
right.
It wasn't a Panenka.
Right. So now, but it's in the context of him missing the Panenka, and still now he's missing it. I mean, I guess for some, it's better that he missed it that way than had he gone for the Panenka. But come on, Mossy. That's when I needed the real Chicharito to step up and say, screw everybody. I am going to Panenka it again and let the chips fall where they may. And he didn't. And that was a little bit disappointing. I mean, there was a moment there for epicness and romance, the likes of which I'm not sure we have ever seen. I'm not sure there's a lot of players that have attempted Panenkas 2 weeks in a row. Ultimately, from a practical perspective, it's another lost chance at potentially points that the Galaxy are desperate for as they come down the stretch here.
Now, on Chicharito, it's a fine line between praising a player for having the courage to step up and take penalties, and at what point is this becoming selfish on his
part? And your captain, by the way, and your designated player. And so and again, to your point, this is where Greg Vanney or any manager in that position is faced with a real challenge, because you want to prop him up. And keep in mind that from a performance perspective, notwithstanding the missed penalties, which certainly hurt you, Chicharito has been good, arguably the best kind of attacking player. Jovalić certainly has come on. So you still want him, and you have to keep him mentally in there, and you don't want to crush him. As good as he is and as mature as he is, there is still the potential if you start taking things away and you start publicly, it's not shaming, but I guess to a certain extent it is, that you lose that player. And I don't think the Galaxy down this stretch here can afford to lose Chicharito. But there comes a point, and I guess that point came at the end of the game, when you say, listen, it's just not happening from you, from the spot. We've given you more chances than any other player would get here, but we need these things to go in that in the world of soccer usually go in 80% of the time.
Portland beat Minnesota 1-0, four straight victories for Portland, three straight defeats for the Loons, who are struggling. Portland leapfrog Minnesota in the standings, are up to fifth. The Loons are sixth. Portland have played one more game. I will say, though, for Minnesota, this is starting to become about making the playoffs. Yep. It's getting a little scary for them.
Yeah, it's close. We mentioned LA on everybody's heels at 40. Salt Lake right on that line there. And to your point, I mean, the Loons in free fall. Right now. And there was such good times earlier in the season, and they were heading in the right direction and everything was fine. And the alternative and the flip part of that is Portland, who I didn't think were ultimately going to have enough to get past the line here. And now, I'm not saying they're sitting pretty, but they're in a very good position right now at 45 points, having played 31 games right now. And it would surprise me if they don't kick on here in the next few games and solidify that that playoff spot.
That was Dairon Asprilla with the winner in the second half. Seattle, with their best result in a long time, they beat Austin 3-0. Rui Diaz with two of the goals. They still have some work to do, but this result kind of gave Seattle some hope that they can still get over the line here. What do you think?
I mean, their problem is that they are, let's see, they're at 39 points. As we said, Salt Lake right on the line there at seventh place at 43 points. So 4 points difference and same amount of games played. And LA, who is above them at 40 points, actually has a game in hand here. So they're going to have to win out, I think, and they're going to have to get some help from others ahead.
Austin, by the way, since that 4-1 win over LAFC, which we all talked up as their affirmation, they've lost three straight, the last two by 3-0 scoreline. So they're all of a sudden kind of fading here. Philadelphia hammered Orlando 5-1. Orlando, we thought, might suffer a little bit of a hangover after their Open Cup triumph. But I don't know if it was that or Philadelphia just being so good right now that they would steamroll anybody. Gazdag scored again. That's 23 goals in the last five games for the Union. That's the most in a five-game stretch in MLS history. So they continue to roll.
I mean, right now, the Philadelphia Union are, I mean, conceivably in their sights, they can have a supporter shield, right? They can't get the record number of points, right?
That ended with LAFC's results. So New England can pop the champagne, 72 Dolphin style, your record.
Still, supporter shield, in terms of goals scored and in terms of goals scored against, they can have historic numbers when it comes to what they're doing. Potentially MVP in Gazdag, potentially defensive MVP, and pick your center backs there, potentially MVP and certainly potential goalkeeper of the year. I mean, it's just... And the amount of goals that they are scoring, the rate in which they're scoring, and without even any regard to the opponent, it's just, it is amazing. We all know it's one thing to do it in the regular season, and then the ability to translate it into the postseason doesn't always happen right there. But right now, Philadelphia Union is the best team in Major League Soccer.
The second place team in the East, Montreal, clinched a playoff berth. Wild one with Columbus. If you had offered Columbus a point going into this game at Montreal, they would have taken it. But the way it happened had to be frustrating for them. They had a 2-0 lead late, and Montreal scored twice in the closing minute, so it finishes 2-2.
Yeah, so they'll take the point, Columbus will, but it's still very, very close. You mentioned New England sitting at 38, Columbus at 41, and... You know, they still have only 29 games played, so there's still some work, and there are midweek games that they can make it up. But this is a big week for Columbus, and a point on the road is fine, but maybe not in the way that it happened.
Cincinnati 6-0 over San Jose. Brenner with a hat trick, a bit of a pad statting hat trick. He got the fifth and sixth very late, but nevertheless, I was happy to see that.
They all count the same. Awesome.
Yeah, they remain above the line. I think they're in good shape to make the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean... Yes, they are. It's still going to get interesting coming down here. But, a lopsided win against San Jose in 2022, even with an earlier year coaching change, is, has to be looked at with perspective. But congratulations.
costly result for New England. They lose 2-1 away to the Red Bulls. So they're below the line right now. New England does have some work to do, Bruce Arena, to get into the playoffs.
I mean, are you going to bet against Bruce Arena? And yet, I've been saying all year, are you going to bet against Brian Schmetzer? And it's going to come down to the line for both of these legends when it comes to MLS coaching. And you hope that they still have something in the bag of tricks to figure it out. But I'm hard pressed to see it happening right now with the way that it's just, and look, lots of changes. We know, we understand that, but you have to be able to anticipate in Major League Soccer that players are going to get sold. You're going to be over the cap. You have to make changes. And what you have 1 year is not necessarily sustainable for multiple years in a row.
Charlotte beat NYCFC 1-0. NYCFC 1 win, 2 draws, and 7 defeats in the last 10. This is one of the worst collapses by a good team I've seen in a very long time. We've talked about it at nauseam.
Yeah, they're going to back
pushing,
in. They're going to back
Castellanos,
in.
The reasons for it. But it's still remarkable to watch.
Yeah, and they're still sitting in fourth place. And like I said, they are going to back in. Oh, by the way, to the Charlotte folks there, because they were angry with me, you know? Because I tweeted, I'll even read you what I tweeted here, Mossy. You might get a kick out of it, or you might not. I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. But so Charlotte plays in an American football stadium. I don't know if you knew this. They don't have their soccer-specific stadium. One of the few teams in Major League Soccer that actually do. They share it with the, give me the name of the...
Panthers.
The Panthers. But they're not Charlotte Panthers. They're the
Carolina Panthers.
Got it. There we go. So they share it with that and ownership and all that kind of stuff. Not the first team to do it. We talk about Atlanta and Seattle and others in the past that have done that. However, when we tuned in to watch the Charlotte game, there were American football lines all over the field. And this is a trigger for a lot of American fans. And I immediately said that this was a bad look for Charlotte. And this was a bad look for Major League Soccer, especially in 2022. I assumed that we had kind of moved past that. And I understand the realities. I said that this was a self-inflicted wound. But I also made it very, very clear that, you know, I've been around for a while, Mossy, and I have, you know, lived the soccer wars and seeing all the ups and downs. And I guess maybe I'm a little bit immune, and it has given me perspective when I see those soccer lines. Do I like it? No. But there's other much bigger fish to fry. Having said that, you know, Charlotte has embraced this team. They come out in huge numbers. They make an incredible atmosphere. They love and support this team. But it was disappointing in 2022 to tune into a Major League Soccer game and to see American football lines. Now, in Charlotte's defense, because they share it with a football team and because of weather, not that this is the first weather situation to happen in Charlotte, I don't think, let alone to rain, there was only so much that they could do, and they had to put down the painting for the lines for both games, the Saturday MLS game and the Sunday NFL game, before the rain came, because you can't put it down on wet grass. And so the Charlotte folks were all up in arms that I would not have done my research and not know this. I knew this, you know, from the moment that I tweeted this. However, you chose to play your games in an NFL stadium. You chose to share this stadium. And we all know ultimately who and what is going to take priority. You, as I said, weather happens. We all understand that. And so when I see this from a national perspective, it's a bad look. And it's okay. Doesn't mean you don't love your team. It doesn't mean I don't recognize and respect the fact that this situation occurred because of the weather, and this was the best of a bad situation, making the best of a bad situation. I get that. But this doesn't happen if you have your own soccer-specific stadium. So anyway, congratulations, Charlotte, on winning a soccer game. Boy, I didn't realize the Charlotte folks were so precious and sensitive when it came to their team or football lines. And then they said, oh, well, we're playing against the defending MLS champions who play in a baseball stadium. I know. That sucks. It sucks that NYCFC plays in a stadium. But that's not what I'm talking about here. I'm talking about your team. I'm talking about you playing with football lines. And I thought we had gotten past that, because while I think it's still a small thing, it still sticks in the craw of a lot of people. And immediately, from an optics perspective, illustrates in graphic form that this is not soccer to a lot of people.
Are you excited to have the NFL back this week?
I am. I watched my Detroit Lions almost win up there in Detroit. They almost won. And for them, that's good. They covered the spread, I'm told, though. I also watched, did you watch the college football?
Of course.
I watched the college football, the Longhorns. They almost won against
Alabama.
The Bama. Yeah. The Bama folks over there. What a game. Was that really not a safety in terms of that call that they made?
Now we're getting to college football VAR.
No, I watched, yeah, it was VAR going on. I was not happy about that. Now, listen, what was his name? Bryce Young. Bryce Young getting out of that tackle. Now, that was the pivotal moment for me. But I digress into American football there for those of you that do or don't follow it.
To get back to
all right, sorry.
Soccer,
get us back on track.
One here. Last score, and then we can wrap up the segment. Atlanta beat Toronto 4-2. Purata, a defender with a hat trick.
Oh,
unbelievable.
Near and dear to my heart. Sending the defender up there, not once, not twice, but three times. And shame in terms of the defending. It's a defender. The guy's already scored, and you're not gonna mark him. That was a big problem. But speaking of a big problem,
so Atlanta keep their hopes alive. I think we can stick a fork in Toronto. They will not be making the playoffs this season.
They will not be making the playoffs. You know, the problem with Joseph Martinez continues to loom large. He's been suspended for antics behind the scenes, and it's remains to be seen whether this relationship will continue. All right, anything else?
That's it.
All right, we'll take another quick break, and we'll be back with a look around, well, I guess Europe and the world. All right, we're back. Mossy, let's take a trip around, I guess, the world, right? Because there was all sorts of stuff going on.
Yes, we talked up this game in our last podcast, and you ranked this as the number one rivalry in club soccer
yes,
in the
I
world.
Did.
So we should pay that off. Boca hosted River Plate this weekend. Boca 1-0 winners at La Bombonera. Dario Benedetto with a header in the second half for the only goal. Marcos Rojo got sent off late, but it didn't matter. So Boca take it. They are now just 2 points out of first place in the Argentina Primera División.
And we saw the reason why I rated them so high. I rated this rival. You saw it. I mean, you saw it. Whether it was the celebration after the goal, whether it was the red card from Rojo up in the face. And he decided to go with his foot as opposed to his head in that moment. And he saw red. He had already had a yellow card, but he went for straight red. So, yeah, it was wonderful scenes. Even regardless of the score, it was still wonderful scenes. And I think it lived up to billing.
One Ligue 1 game I'd like to mention, PSG 1-0 winners over Brest. Neymar scored a sensational goal after a lovely pass from Lionel Messi, Neymar's 10th of the season in all competitions. Hercules Gomez tweeted excitedly, "Neymar is the best player in the world and Brazil are clear favorites in Qatar." Let me just say to our good friend, from your fingertips to God's ears, my friend, I hope you are right. But
well, correct me if I'm wrong, but you picked Argentina to win the World
Cup.
I picked who?
Brazil.
Yeah. I think I did. Exactly.
So you and Hercules Gomez on the same page.
Oh, that's not going to end well.
Messi,
that's
by the way, with a great assist, as I said. So he's playing very well as well in the role of provider.
Who did they play?
Brest.
That's how you pronounce it?
I think so. I should have done my research on this because, you know, I'm supposedly Mr., you know.
Right? Yeah, you're the Francophile over there. All right. Well, congratulations to PSG and to future World Cup winner Neymar.
One game in Serie A, I want to mention, you were texting me about this, so you were all over it. A wild one, Juve 2-2 against Salernitana. Salernitana jumped out to a 2-0 lead, Candreva and Piatek with the goals. Then Bremer pulls one back for Juve with a nice header.
Where's he from again?
Brazil just got his first call to the national team, so you need to add him to your research.
Oh, my goodness.
Because he might make the World Cup squad. Then in stoppage time, Juve earn a penalty. Bonucci takes it, gets saved by the goalkeeper, but he puts in the rebound. And if it had ended right there, already it would have been a crazy game.
Right.
But then even more madness ensued. Juve thought they had scored a last gasp winner. Milik with a header off a corner. He rips off his shirt to celebrate, picks up a second yellow, gets red carded. And then to add insult to injury, the goal gets chalked off by VAR. They spotted... Bonucci, they claim, A, was in an offside position, and B, was interfering with the play because he lunged at the ball. So it might have impaired the goalkeeper's ability to stop it. That's pretty questionable to begin
yes.
with. And then some footage emerged that showed that Bonucci was probably onside because Candreva had gone over to guard against a short corner. And at least to the naked eye, it looks like he was keeping Bonucci way onside. And to the point where people think that VAR just forgot to account for him. They were so worried about the players on the box. They've come out and said, no, that's not true. We did account for Candreva, and our cameras have different angles than what you saw on TV. So you got to take our word for it. I don't know. It was all pretty embarrassing stuff for Serie A and led to all sorts of VARs ruining the game stuff, which I know always gets you going.
Well, I mean, I will say a couple of things about this particular play. First off, what it highlights is that in a world without VAR, because I know there's still people that argue that, oh, VAR is, you know, the worst thing that ever happened to the game, and we need to get rid of it and go back to the way the game once was in its purest form. The problem with that is that the train has left the station relative to technology, okay? And we, and when I say we, those of us in the media, immediately are going to use the technology that exists to consistently show the plays that are got, that they get wrong. And that's the essence and the importance of VAR all was born out of, let's get the calls right. Okay. So that's a problem going back. The second thing is, in this particular play, I didn't think that there was interference with the goalkeeper stopping the ball. Obviously, he didn't touch the ball going over. And secondly, if you look at the actual play, what the referees should have done, and it was complete mayhem after, red cards and people fighting and screaming, yelling, and all, as you can imagine. What the referee actually, and the VAR could have actually done, is gone all the way back to the, even before the cross, there was a, you talked about ripping shirts off. There was an attacking player who basically had his shirt ripped almost over his head in that moment. So what you could have done, said, all right, well, maybe it was, I'll say, maybe it wasn't, but you could have had the wisdom of Solomon, you know, kind of split the baby, if you will, and said, okay, I don't know if it's offsides. I don't know if he was interfering. I don't know all that kind of stuff, but there was an actual foul on the play that happened initially. And what we're going to do is we're going to give that as the actual penalty. And so it still would have been tied and you still would have had the opportunity to win the game, but it wasn't assured as opposed to this play. Either way, it was incredibly entertaining. I loved every minute of it. I loved the impact of VAR. I loved the drama and the theater that it elicited. And it was just one of those perfect, perfect type of games. Now, from a Juve perspective, that it even got this far, that is a problem. This is not a highly functioning Juve team in the way that we expect.
Yeah, they've drawn 4 of their 6 games. There was an American component to this one. Weston McKennie started. Yeah. Another underwhelming performance.
And he got taken out before all the
out. You know, it's interesting. I don't know that McKennie's approval rating among Juve fans is any higher than Pulisic's among Chelsea supporters. I see the same arguments on Twitter between U.S. fans and Juve supporters about McKennie that I see with Pulisic. The big difference is, in McKennie's case, he does have the support of his manager. Allegri seems to like him and keeps putting him out there, even in the face of criticism. So it's stark contrast to Pulisic with Tuchel. We'll see now with Graham Potter. But yeah, it is an interesting dynamic where you actually have the manager sort of, I don't want to say like being overly generous to the American player. We're used to it the other way, where we feel like the American player is sort of, there's a bias against him. In this case, I feel like Allegri would be in good standing if he took McKennie out of the starting lineup, sure. But he keeps putting him out there.
I think Weston, regardless of where he is or what coach he is playing under, I think there's a fondness that coaches will have for him based on his attitude, his personality, how hard he works, all of those different things combined. And Christian Pulisic is a better, for lack of a better phrase, better soccer player, okay? I'm convinced that Christian Pulisic in a skills challenge would be able to beat a Weston McKennie. However, a soccer game is not a skills challenge. And so I think Weston benefits from that. But how that is finite, okay? And if you have the player that's able to put, you know, the skills of a Weston McKennie or the skills of a Christian Pulisic and marry it with the work ethic and the spirit and the physical output of a Weston McKennie, you would have the perfect type of player. And so neither of them are perfect, but if you are imperfect, then you better off, you better have the support of your coach, which is ultimately what Weston has. And well, until now, maybe Christian Pulisic has not had it.
Sergiño Dest, by the way, an unused sub in AC Milan's victory over Sampdoria. For everybody that thought the
he's
grass
betting
was
in.
So
don't worry.
Green.
He's just, you know, it's a process.
I know, that's right. I don't want to overreact, but I just wanted to get that in there. We move to Germany, but stay on the American tip. Union Berlin, 1-0 winners over Cologne. Jordan Pefok did miss a penalty in this match, but nevertheless, his team gets the W, continuing their strong start to the campaign. Joe Scally, another solid performance for Gladbach, who held Freiburg to a 0-0 draw. There's some Joe Scally buzz again. People think he might get another shot here in the September window. Are you buying that?
I mean, again, in listening to Greg Berhalter and all of the times that he talks and all the interviews that he does, I think that he is much more decided than we feel, than we think from the outside. I think that he has seen players, and I don't think that he is going to be wooed and swayed necessarily by a good run of form from a player. I don't know if that's going to, specific to Joe Scally, that's necessarily going to change. But I think it's going to be hard for Joe Scally.
Bayern, incidentally, held to a 2-2 draw by Stuttgart. They have now drawn their last three Bundesliga games after winning the first three. So,
well, they heard everybody talking about how they were just going to run away with it. And, you know, the conspiracy theory and the tinfoil in me says, well, they were told to, you know, take your foot off the gas so we can make it some sort of competitive league through the year.
Dortmund got drilled 3-0 away to Leipzig. Interesting note there. Leipzig have just appointed Marco Rosa as their manager, replacing Tedesco. This was his first game in charge. He was Dortmund's manager last season and was let go somewhat surprisingly at the end of the campaign. I didn't understand that move. So now he ends up going to Leipzig, and his first game in charge is beating Dortmund 3-0. So had to be a satisfying result for Marco Rosa.
Must feel so good.
And finally, La Liga. Barcelona 4-0 winners away to Cadiz. The very scary incident in this match. A fan had a heart attack in the stands. The Cadiz goalkeeper Ledesma did a great job, ran over, alerted the medical staff, helped them resuscitate him. It sounds like the fan is okay. The match was stopped for several minutes while they were tending to the supporter. So that was all incredible stuff.
I mean, so it's, I don't know if it's new in medical emergencies happening in stadiums. I mean, it can't be new. It's certainly happened before. But the fact that the games stop now, the fact that we are made aware that there is a situation going on, and then, you know, the interaction and obviously the medical advancements on site that teams have, while it's never good to see whether it involves a player or anybody in the stands have happen, it's good to see that there is now a recognition that things can be done and things need to be done as quickly as possible. And obviously, whatever can be done supersedes the actual playing of the game. And I think players are taking it to heart and recognize that, in this moment, you know, even, you know, the score doesn't matter. But for Ledesma, in that moment of running that over, he could possibly have, you know, helped. And that's, you know, that's a good thing. That's a good thing. And that's a good evolution and progression and growth of our sport.
As for the match, all the goals came in the second half. Frankie de Jong, and then
they're biding their time.
Lewandowski, Ansu Fati, and Dembele all came on and scored as subs. Xavi had rotated with an eye towards a big Champions League game that we're going to talk about in a minute. So Barcelona, after drawing their first La Liga game, have ripped off now four emphatic victories. They are 2 points behind Real Madrid, who have 5 wins out of 5 in La Liga. The latest victory this weekend, 4-1 over Stu Holden's Mallorca. We were texting with Stu. His boys hung tough. They were up 1-0 late in the first half, and then Valverde scored an incredible solo goal. This is going to be a Puskas Award candidate. He dribbled the length of the field and then a left-footed strike, so made it 1-1 at halftime. And then the floodgates really opened in the last 20 minutes or so. Vinicius scored a nice goal, wonderfully set up by Rodrigo. And then Rodrigo, with a great solo effort, he dribbled past three guys and scored. Rudiger tacked on a little late. So it ended up being a lopsided score, but I was trying to true up Stu because I did feel like the game was closer than the final score. Now, Stu couldn't help taking a little shot at Vinicius via text message. And this has actually become a bit of a topic in Spain. People think Vinicius has become a bit too showboaty. He's inherited some of Neymar's bad qualities. And so Stu while praising him, did say that Vinicius got under his nerves as well. He was watching this game. What do you think? Do you buy any of that?
Well, first off, thank you to Stu and Mallorca for giving to the game, if you will, because these goals, like you said, are going to be on replay. And while I certainly wanted to cheer up Stu, I'm not sure I did it when I offered my services to Mallorca as a center back, given some of the defensive decisions individually and collectively of his team going forward. But there's certainly no shame. As far as Vinicius Jr., I don't care, man. Dance, do whatever you want. It doesn't faze me or bother me. If Vinicius is even close to Neymar, that's a good thing. That's a good thing for whatever team he ultimately is playing for, whether it's international or club. So I think it's just sour grapes.
Incidentally, Rodrigo has kind of become the other Brazilian starlet at Real Madrid, somewhat overshadowed by Vinicius, but he's coming along very nicely as well. I think he's going to be on the World Cup squad.
Okay.
This was a game where the Madrid media was really touting Real Madrid's future. Because you had guys like Valverde, Vinicius, Rodrigo shining. Keep in mind, Tchouaméni has also had a great start to the season, Camavinga. So they feel like Real Madrid, while not sacrificing the present, I mean, they won La Liga and the Champions League last season. They still have veterans like Benzema, Modric, Cruz, Alaba. But they very nimbly here also set themselves up for the future with all these talented young players. So it's an interesting dynamic there.
What else we got?
So, if you've been living in a cave the last few weeks and you're not aware of the biggest development in sports media, we now do two podcasts a week. So we have another one coming up later this week in which
we'll be able to recap
all the midweek action. So just to give you a little preview of what we're going to be talking about in that second podcast, it will be match day two of the UEFA Champions League. We have some terrific games, including Bayern Munich playing host to Barcelona, Robert Lewandowski going back to his old stomping grounds.
Yes, and going back in fine form. He individually and his team, certainly not the likes of the Barca's that we've seen in the past, but formidable. And especially after you mentioned Bayern Munich. Now, they might have been sandbagging here, Bayern Munich, but they're going to have to step up a whole nother notch here because this is going to be very different. And they're not, as they say, in form, as you mentioned, with three ties in a row in the Bundesliga right now. So not the juggernaut that started the campaign, the Bundesliga campaign. And if they're not careful, if they were to lose at home to Barcelona this week, then there will be, I don't know how you say it in German, but sirens blaring. And if Lewandowski were to score, can you imagine?
We'll ask Derek Ray how you say that in German. Also on Tuesday, Liverpool host Ajax, our boss Zach Kenworthy, who's a Liverpool super fan, was in here right before we started taping to hand you some sort of book about the U.S. national team.
Yeah, he gave me a book about the national team by Adam Elder called New Kids in the World Cup. It's basically, it chronicles the 1990 U.S. men's national team that appeared in Italy.
You asked him about this Liverpool Ajax game. He's trying to feign confidence,
yes,
but it didn't seem very believable to me. You could tell there was a
shield up, and a sensitivity that I sensed in that all is not well in Liverpool land. And that's not any revelation. I think everybody recognizes that this team right now is not where it needs to be. I think the question is to Zach and all of his Liverpool fans is it heading in the direction? Can it be? And look, Ajax, it's not an elite team, but we were talking about this off air. I mean, they just churn. It's amazing.
It's amazing. All the players they sold this summer, and yet they haven't missed a beat because there's a new wave of guys. This Kudos up top looks like a real player. Kenneth Taylor in the midfield looks like an absolute star. He's probably going to go for 80 million euros in the next couple of years. It's amazing how they're able to just reinvent with all these young players. Wednesday, Manchester City play host to Borussia Dortmund. Dortmund sporting director Sebastian Kehl came out this past week and said that Erling Haaland had become a burden for the club, a distraction, and that they're relieved to have gotten rid of him. He highlighted the fact that their first 10 goals this season were scored by 10 different players. You see, we have a more balanced attack. I don't know if I want to be giving Erling Haaland bulletin board material.
Yeah, don't do that. That's not smart. That's not smart at all. I mean, even without Erling Haaland, I still think Man City wins this and wins this comfortably.
Yeah. One other game, Chelsea-Salzburg. I think we're all curious to see Graham Potter's debut because obviously they didn't play at the weekend and what this means for Pulisic. I mean, imagine if the team sheet comes out and he's in it, then it means like new lease on life.
Yeah, happy days are here again. I mean, the cancellation of games actually gave Potter kind of a little respite to kind of figure it out. Not that he would have wanted that, given the reason, but it'll be interesting to see who he picks, and then obviously how they play and what differences there are. We always look for, does this team look any different? Are they playing differently? Are players in different positions? Are there different players? And what it's going to look like under Potter. And so, I think that this is a relatively, it's not easy, but they should win this game.
Also, some midweek MLS action we're going to be keeping an eye on. Great one on Tuesday evening. Minnesota hosts LAFC. As we talked about, Minnesota, they've lost three straight. LAFC have lost four of their last five. So battle of struggling teams, but they obviously are both.
Who's more desperate?
Well, I mean,
it's got to be Minnesota, right?
Yeah, Minnesota is in danger of missing the playoffs altogether. So I would say it's them. But yeah, LAFC, a negative result here, and the supporter shield would really, you know, if they care about winning that. Also, big one in the East, Inter Miami hosts Columbus. Inter Miami have lost three straight. Their playoff hopes are fading, but still, they've only played 29, so they have five games left. If they were ever to win this game over Columbus, which is the last team above the line right now, they would really thrust themselves right back into it.
Yeah, that's the real desperation game for the men in pink down there.
Also on Wednesday, Austin RSL. Austin, as I mentioned, struggling as well. They've lost three straight, so see if they can get
an RSL just kind of cruising, you know, behind the scenes, not making a lot of noise, and finding their way into the playoffs under Pablo Mastroianni.
So bottom line, our second podcast of the week will be lots of fun. We have lots of games to talk about.
All right. Anything else?
That's it.
All right. Let's take another quick break. When we come back, it's time for Ask Alexi. Don't go anywhere. Okay, we're back, and it's time for Ask Alexi. Use that hashtag Ask Alexi out there on the social media platforms, or you can even call in and leave us a message. 657-549-2297, our State of the Union podcast hotline, 657-549-2297. And keep in mind all the Twitter handles that we have out there on the social media platforms. It's SOTU with Alexi, SOTU with Alexi. What do the people want to know this week, Marcy?
Matt Skinner asks, Alexi, how do we convert American EPL fans to enjoy and support MLS and USL as well?
Okay, so, all right, this is an interesting question. You know Bonnie Raitt? You ever heard of Bonnie Raitt? I think I've told this before, but one of my favorite songs of all time, not just hers, but all time, is I Can't Make You Love Me If You Don't. And she sang this beautiful song and this incredible line. And the reality is that there are, from an MLS perspective, as we've said time and time again, it's not that there aren't soccer fans in the US, it's that there's not enough MLS fans. And so to you, Matt, I recognize that you want to convert. It's very, very difficult. All right. I can't make you love me if you don't. I can't make people love Major League Soccer if they don't. There are some that no matter what I do, including giving them money, they are still not going to love Major League Soccer for any number of reasons, some legit and some, in my mind, completely illegitimate, but whatever. So they are gone. Then there's a section of MLS fans that I think you're not necessarily converting, but they are open to having Major League Soccer on their palate. And many that do. There are many that have their teams overseas and then they have their domestic affiliations. I look at this as, you know, go after the soccer fans, either the emerging soccer fans or the American sports fans that just want to have soccer on their palate. Okay? As long as there is this perceived and or real distinct separation when it comes to the perception and the real belief of talent out there, the EPL is going to maintain its stranglehold in terms of popularity. Keep in mind, we said before, the migration that happened because of a bunch of different things, including money, and the opening of the European community. But a migration like that can happen again, where players and everybody goes to a specific place. And then that's where all the focus of attention, and that creates credibility. I was talking to my my good friend, Matt Doyle, this morning. We were going back and forth on text, and we were talking about different things. And I've said for many, many years that in the future, we may see a Major League Soccer where you get to into the 30 plus teams, right? And then you may see an actual split. And I this is not about getting into pro rel, but a intra MLS type of pro rel situation could occur. Now, I know for a lot of the zealots out there, that's not pro rel, but you could potentially have an MLS 1 and an MLS 2 and have pro rel going in between there. And that might help with credibility and might help create more fans going forward. Also, you got to put money. You got to put money into the actual teams. People equate money oftentimes with quality. Doesn't always work out that way, but oftentimes it is. And we look at the money in the EPL. I'm not saying you have to compete with the EPL, but in very short order, with relatively, I know it's not my money, I'm spending a lot of money here, but in relatively short order, with not a ridiculous amount of money, I think you can be the team or the league in the Americas going forward. And I think you have to lean into America. Give American sports fans, whether they're soccer fans or not, give them something that is unique. Give them something that is theirs, that they can own. And while they may think globally, they act locally. That's what I think MLS has, in that people want to be proud of their leagues. People want to be proud of their sports. And I think that there is an element out there that wants to take pride in their soccer league. And, you know, the insecurities and the inferiority complexes that we talk about all the time, those will dissipate with time, not overnight, but will dissipate with time. And I, like I said, leaning into this is an American, in this case, a North American league, and whether it's MLS or whether it's USL, giving people in their own backyard something that is their own. Give them their own soccer. And I think that that will resonate over time.
This is somewhat unrelated, but I'll mention anyway. My most controversial moment ever on this podcast was years ago. I did this whole spiel about how as more American players went to the Premier League, American EPL fans would increasingly feel very conflicted when their favorite team was facing another team that had a prominent American.
Right.
And in my spiel, I sort of implied that American EPL fandom is fraudulent and not authentic. And so I got a lot of hate on Twitter that week from people that were offended by that. And it was obnoxious, and I apologized. But I thought of it recently because one of our colleagues, Brad Weimer, is a big Chelsea fan. And when Leeds played Chelsea and Brendan Aaronson scored that goal where he picked Mendy's pocket, I asked Brad Weimer, how did you feel in the moment that that goal occurred? And he admitted, I felt very conflicted.
Yeah.
I'm an American. A U.S. player just had this great moment, but it's against Chelsea. So I do think it's an increasingly interesting dynamic there.
And there is an element that because it's not American, as I've said time and time again, you can see this in music and you see it in fashion and entertainment and all that kind of stuff. We want sometimes what is not ours because it's cool and it's, I guess, exotic. And there's a whole culture built around mate and being an EPL fan that we've talked about before. But I mean, if Chelsea was your city team, okay, would you, and it had all the exact same players and the exact same media attention and the exact same credibility, would you still follow it in the same way? Is it a romantic notion that this is a team that plays in a quote unquote football country, in a real football culture that's over there? And would it lose that if it was over here? I don't know, but I'd love to see it tested going forward. Incidentally, Chelsea is already talking about the franchise model and going to get some satellite teams out there in the way that City have done it and Red Bulls and those types of stuff. So I don't think that that's stopping anytime soon when it comes to these big super clubs.
Next up, Silver J asks, why hasn't Nike officially unveiled their World Cup jerseys? Grr! I want to know officially now.
Well, I've been holding off on allowing this to happen. However, I think it's come to a point where I need for the good of the country to give my blessing and allow the announcement to happen. So I think it's going to happen this week. And if and when it does, there will be the usual hand-wringing and consternation. And certainly with the leaks that are out there, I think the stories are already written. We will have our take, Mossy, when this happens. And, you know, we will, you know, talk about how good or bad it ultimately is. And in preparation for that, I'm also going to put out my top five U.S. men's national team jerseys. And I'm gonna rank them like I said. And we've had some good and bad over the years. Some that have either in the moment become iconic and some that over time have become iconic. And you can imagine some of them over there. But I'm gonna go back and really dive in to what has come before, because you're always measured by what has come before when it comes to these jersey drops here. So what's it, Silver J? The reason why they haven't unveiled them yet, when I say them, I mean Nike, is because I haven't allowed them. But I'll make a call, and for you, I will make sure that they come out this week.
Last question, Ty Ty Mighty asks, what would ever convince anyone we found our number nine? I assume the we is the U.S. men's national team.
Okay, so, I mean, this is evergreen type of stuff. I don't think anything that happens in this next window is going to convince everybody. People might be swayed one way or the other when it comes to it, but the reality is that in, what have we said, September 12th, 2022, I don't know how many days we are before here, but the World Cup is right around the corner. We have yet to solidify that position. And there is not a single, well, other than Jesus Ferreira, nobody has stepped up, grabbed a hold of that position, made it their own, and retained it, except for Jesus Ferreira. And even Jesus Ferreira has done it in an unconventional way and a non-traditional way in the way that he plays that position. Now, has he been effective? Yes, but Jesus Ferreira, in my expert opinion, looks nothing like, you know, the people that we talk about in the past. Your Josie Altidores, your Brian McBrides, your, you know, Eric Winalda, whoever. You can go back with these types of traditional number nine strikers that I think Greg Berhalter envisioned happening, but then he recognized that it just didn't for whatever reason. We even asked him that, and he said, I don't know. And so this is where we find ourselves. So unless somebody stars in the World Cup, I think that is where somebody is going to be convinced that we found our number nine. I don't think that this window is going to change it. It doesn't mean somebody's not going to score and we're not going to go gaga over somebody scoring a goal and say, oh my goodness, this could be it. And it's PFOC or it's Sargent or it's somebody else. But I think it's going to be a false sense of security. And ultimately, I think, and this is, I'll leave you with this. You know, Greg Berhalter, I think I got a lot of time for him. I think he's really, really smart in the way that he thinks about soccer and the way that he thinks about his role relative to the national team. And in his interview that he did on MLSsoccer.com with Andrew Wiebe, I think he said a really important thing in that this is not the end. This is the beginning. And if it is to be believed that we have this incredible depth and young talent, albeit inexperienced, then the reality is we have many, many years of watching these players develop and hopefully develop in the right way and be positive and progress and grow. And so if and when it doesn't happen for a player and even maybe even a position relative to Qatar, it doesn't mean that that is always going to be the case. But you play and you play well in a World Cup and it can fundamentally change your life. And it can fundamentally change the perception that the world has of you. Believe me, I know from experience. And so if it's Jesus Ferreira or somebody else starring in the World Cup and scoring goals and looking great up there, that's going to be that person that has taken a hold of it.
As I always say, if it wasn't for the World Cup, you would not be sitting here today doing a podcast with me.
Exactly.
That's the impact it's had in your
life. It's amazing. This The World Cup has led me to this moment, and I thank my lucky stars and the soccer gods up there for giving me that World Cup so that I many, many years later would be able to sit at this table multiple times a week now, by the way, and do the State of the Union with the great David Mossy.
That is it.
That is it. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, well, it's the end of our show, and I'll give you my one for the road. All right, we're back, and it's the end of our show. And so at the end of each and every show, I give you my one for the road. Kevin Anderson asked me on Twitter, and he asked a little while ago, about my prep for the World Cup. And he asked that I expound on it in the form of my Lonely Hearts soccer club that I do. Now, for people that don't know, on Twitter, there's a thing called Spaces. And I try to do it every day, but it doesn't end up happening every single day. But it's kind of like a pop-up show, if you will. Never really know when it's going to happen. But when it does, it's basically a radio call-in show that happens on Twitter for those that don't know. And Kevin listens to that. And he had asked about this, and he asked me to talk about it on the show. But I'm going to use it here on the State of the Union because I think it's an interesting question. So, Mossy, as you know, and Mossy is the brains behind a lot of the stuff that happens in the World Cup. So if on the off chance I say something that's halfway articulate and or intelligent, just know there's a good chance that it stems from something that Mossy has planted in my brain. I am but a vessel for Mossy's greatness out there. Having said that, you know, I have, as everybody that works these big tournaments and having done many over the years, I have a way of going about it. And as a studio analyst, it's different than if you were calling a game. Obviously, the John Strongs and the Stu Holdens, to a certain extent, you know, they have specific games that ultimately they are responsible for and therefore specific teams. And so there is as much more in-depth and team focused. My responsibility is the entire field, okay? There is no chance in hell, doesn't matter who you are, that you can ever know everything. I don't have to know everything, okay? I have to be educated so that when the red light does turn on, that I know about what we are talking about and I can give context. Hold on a second. All right, for those that are just listening, you can't see this, but I'm holding up my World Cup Bible, is what I call it, okay? And basically, it is my research and musings, day in and day out, of everything that is going on. This upcoming window is really, really important because it's really unique in that we get to see these teams so close to the World Cup, our final opportunity to see these teams coming into November and December. So I think a lot of eyes, all of our eyes will be on these teams. We're doing Nations League, so that's going to be fun to actually call games that involve World Cups. First things first. Obviously, you got to know who's in the World Cup. So you go through and you memorize, you know, who's in the World Cup and all of the different groups. And you memorize all of the coaches. And so people ask, well, how do you keep track of them all? Well, some of them, they're just, you already know, right? Because we are, you know, we think about the game on a daily basis. And I'm not the savant that you are. So I need as many tricks as I possibly can. So, for example, the Tunisia coach, right? Jalel Kadri, okay? Only because I've memorized that. That's not just something that I inherently know. I memorize that, but I remind myself of Family Matters, Jaleel White, right? So that reminds me of the first name. I think about the military when I think about Tunisia, and so a Kadri, I think about that. So that's ultimately where it happens. Walid Regragui, okay? The coach of Morocco. I think about my wallet, Walid. It starts with a W, actually. And I also think about my brother, whose name is Greg. And my mother used to call him Greggy and Regreggy and stuff like that. So it's all these little tricks to keep in mind and remind yourself. And it's constantly going through it. If you go and you look at my office at home, my entire wall is papered with teams, with headshots of players. And look, as I said, there's the ones that you just know. And then there's the ones that you have to research. And then I have an Excel sheet that has all different contacts. And as we get closer and closer to the World Cup, I will access those contacts and I will sit and I will talk with people and they will run me through the pros and the cons and the ups and the downs and the goods and the bads and the strengths and the weaknesses of each and every team. And even then, there's no way that I could possibly have everything in my little brain. The most difficult part of a World Cup, at least I have found, is the first week, okay? As you are kind of establishing, these are the teams, these are some of the stories that are emerging, and you have something to work with. As the World Cup gets going, you know, the narratives are out there, and you are looking for your own personal take on all of that kind of stuff. But the first week, we have four games a day, day after day after day. But I don't want to speak for you, Mossy, but I live for this. This is what I love to do. And it's my job. It's my job to be prepared. I will tell you this. I will make a mistake. I will, you know, pronounce the name wrong, or I will have the wrong name, or I'll have a brain fart at some point. Inevitably, that's going to happen. And when you're on air for whatever, 6 weeks, day in and day out, inevitably that is going to happen. But it is a constant process. I usually start about 6 weeks before, or excuse me, 6 months before. And I just go day in and day out talking about, it's like doing scales on the guitar. You just got to do them. And it gets easier and easier and it gets ingrained in your head. And then the ball is kicked. And then you use all of that as reference and you use all of that as depth to inform the stuff that you are reacting to in the moment.
And I know you're knee deep into it because I got a random call from you on a day off recently asking you how to pronounce a South Korean player.
Right, right. And so here is my, and this applies to all television, all right? And I'll leave you with this. And thank you, by the way, for the question there, Kevin Anderson. I subscribe to the iceberg theory in that when it comes to television, ultimately what you see is only the tip of the iceberg. But the quality, okay, of that tip that you see on air is informed by the rest of it that is underneath. And all of that work, because I guarantee there'll be stuff that will just come and go. And you will think, oh, why did I spend all that time thinking about that when it ended up on the cutting room floor? Well, that gives you context, all right? That gives you form. That gives you a solid base from which ultimately to get to the good stuff that ends up appearing on television. And so, you know, if there is a moment where you say, hey, that was good in that tip of that iceberg, know that it's only because of all the work that's been done to make that base that's underneath the water. And most importantly, I got a lot of help, whether it's you or our research team or all of the different men and women that we have working behind the scenes. Many of them are there to make us look good. And they go, you know, incredible distances and do so much work to make us look good. So thank you ahead of time for all the help that you and everybody is going to give me and others when it comes to our broadcast. Anyway, that's my one for the road. I hope that gave you a little look behind the curtain there. Anything else, Mossy?
That's it.
All right. As you mentioned, we will have another show later on this week, and that will be after Champions League action. And so we will review all of that and preview what's coming in the weekend and what we think right now is going to be a return to EPL. I can't imagine it isn't. And as I mentioned before, maybe a roster announcement and maybe a jersey announcement when it comes to the U.S. men's national team. So we'll dive into all of that later on in this week. Thank you so much for tuning in each and every show that we have in the week. Remember, you can find us out there on all the social media platforms. You can use Ask Alexi, SOTU with Alexi is the Twitter handle and all of the handles for all of the media platforms there. If you're watching, thank you for watching. If you're listening, thank you for listening. Keep reviewing and rating and subscribing and doing all those different things. We will talk to you later on this week. And for Mossy, this is Alexi saying goodbye, and we will see you next time. And until then, and as always, size the devil.